We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, BronxPinstripes.com proudly brings to you the most exciting Yankees podcast in the world, George's Box.
All the dramatic things I've ever seen. To George's Box. Goodness gracious.
Welcome back to George's Box. I'm Nick, and JJ is at WrestleMania. You know, normally we have two Jacks and one Nick. Today we have two Nicks and one Jack. I am joined by Nick Costanzo, who goes by Stanzo, I believe. And I got to say, you know, of all the people on Yankees Twitter that I interact with, I feel like I agree with you pretty much all the time. You got some good takes, man.
I appreciate you having me, Nick. And yeah, I guess it comes with the name because I agree with your takes a lot as well. But, you know, good to be here.
There's a lot of, I think, people on here that are just, you know, going for clicks and trying to say those crazy Skip Bayless type Yankee takes. So it's nice to just kind of stay in the middle. But I think you'd probably agree with me. I don't think anybody predicted this start. I mean, take the most optimistic Yankee fan you know. Do you think anybody had us at 8-2 coming out of the gate with the schedule?
No, absolutely not. And I don't even think the strength of the schedule has been talked about enough. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone knew the opener in Houston. I think most fans probably would have signed up for a split. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. But then going to Arizona to face the reigning National League champions and then coming home to face the Blue Jays, a team who, especially at Yankee Stadium, has given us issues. I saw a tweet coming into yesterday's game. I think the away team was 35-17 in Yankees Blue Jays series since 2021. So we have not played them well at the stadium. So to take that series as well, absolutely huge for us.
Definitely. And that makes sense because I feel like we've won a lot of big games up in Canada with Judge hitting homers and going off that Maple Leaf last year. But yeah, and when I looked at the schedule, when I first looked at it, I kind of panicked because I'm like, all right, House of Horrors in Houston. And then, like you said, the NL champs, and they come out of there well. And then to come home and face Toronto. So let's get into it. We'll work backwards a little bit and start with Sunday's game. Luis Gil, 4 2/3. 8 strikeouts. I mean, the stuff, it's such easy gas with him, easy 98. What did you think of him?
That's what I always say. So I was a big fan of him when he came up in 2021 when we were making that playoff push. He had some big starts for us. I remember being at the stadium. He faced the Red Sox. He looked good. And like you said, it's effortless gas. The off-speed stuff is pretty nasty too, but command has always been the issue for him. Didn't really show too much in Arizona, but today, obviously, in that third inning, kind of reared its ugly head, and the wheels almost came all the way off. So good job by him to limit it, but obviously can't be having innings, you know, where you're walking three guys and hitting a guy. So I love the guy, and I hope he, you know, continues to have success, but definitely needs to figure out the command a little bit more consistently.
That felt like almost like his growing up moment, like he was going through puberty. You know, Angel Hernandez is squeezing the zone. He's getting frustrated. You could tell the blood was boiling a little bit. And like you said, he hangs in there with just the one run against a tough lineup. Now, we haven't really talked about this, but for me, I kind of see him almost as the closer of the future, assuming they don't want to pay Holmes. Obviously, if you have a guy that can be a frontline starter, he's more valuable there. But I just picture him coming out of the bullpen, throwing 100 miles an hour, being a stud closer. Where do you kind of see him long term?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, how many times have we seen the Yankees going all the way back to, you know, Jabba Chamberlain, where they have a guy that comes up and it's like you know, is he just young and, you know, you gotta let him go through the growing pains in the rotation? Because like you just said, you know, a frontline starter is more valuable than any reliever, even a closer. But at the same time, some guys do just profile better as relievers. And if you looked at his stuff purely, it's like, yeah, that guy's a closer. Like, I know there's been a lot of talk about Clay Holmes, like, oh, we want a closer that can miss bats a little bit more. Luis Gil is the definition of a guy that can miss bats. So I don't know. I think as of right now, I think I would like to keep him in the rotation. I don't know that I would ping pong him too much this year, especially with the way some of these other stars have looked. We can get to that. But I still have hopes for him as a starting pitcher, but wouldn't surprise me to see him in the bullpen at some point.
No, you got to figure he was touching 100 in Arizona in the first inning. You got to figure if he's coming out of the bullpen, he could get it up a little bit even more, 101, 102 maybe. So it is tempting. And just to go backwards a little bit, there is a lot of Clay Holmes debate. And to me, I thought, was it Wednesday was the last game in Arizona? Like, that was a perfect example. There are times where if you can't get strikeouts and there's just ground balls that either find a hole or it's an infield hit or it's an error, it can just put yourself in some tough positions if your closer isn't racking up K's.
Yeah, well, especially with the Manfred man too. Like, I thought, ironically, and I kind of go back and forth on Clay, I defend him because I think he's been very good as a Yankee. Like, the numbers speak for themselves. Obviously, there's been some blowups, and I think that this is something all baseball fans are kind of prone to. They'll be like, oh, he always blows it when it matters most. It's like, listen, Clay Holmes is pitching, you know, 55, 60 times a year. 55 to 60 times a year, it's going to be in a close game. Like, he's not going to blow. Like, you're not bringing Clay Holmes into a 7-1 game. So obviously, it's going to stick out to you when he blows the save. But that being said, yes, if relievers that can't miss bats, especially when you're coming in to an inning with runners already on and in extras with the Manfred man, that's a guarantee, you know, you're going to get yourself into some trouble. So I thought that was probably the best he looked all year, ironically. He gets 5 ground balls, but obviously, you know, one Volpe error, a couple guys already on, and then, you know, you blow a 2-run lead. So I don't pin that on him, but it does go back to your point of sometimes you need a fireman that could just pump gas and get you 2 or 3 strikeouts.
Yeah, bring Andrew Miller back. That was that was my boy post Mo. But I mean, if you look at Sunday, I mean, clearly the pivotal moment of the game, Rizzo walks, bases loaded, and you know they're up 1-0, and you have Stanton up, and he goes to 0-2, and everybody in the building, everybody at Billy's, everybody is thinking strikeout, right? 0-2, especially with Hernandez, and he hits a rocket for a grand slam. The place went absolutely nuts. Do you believe in the resurgence? Do you think he can really come back strong, or do you think that was a little fugazi?
So I've been old takes exposed myself because he looked, I mean, to start the year, but especially on Friday, I thought he looked terrible. And this isn't a 1 week reaction into the season. The guy has not been hitting fastballs up until, you know, from the start of last year, really. You could trace it almost all the way back to that injury when he gets hurt the All-Star break in 2022. And he really hasn't been the same guy since then. So I do love Giancarlo, and I love, you know, how he's handled himself, you know, as a Yankee. And I hate some people will be like, see, I told you with Giancarlo. It's like some people never gave him a chance, even all the way back in 2018, just because the guy strikes out. And yeah, when he's going bad, he's going bad. But the version of him we've seen the last year and a half, 2 years, that's not the Giancarlo that we got. Like, this was a guy that dragged us to the playoffs in 2021. He had a monster 2018. Like, I think it's a guy where his body has failed him. So, you know, for him to do the things he did the last 2 days is incredible. And I'm hopeful. I can't say I'm all the way bought back in yet, but I'm definitely hopeful. I think the one tweet that I saw today, which is crazy, and it kind of illustrates how crazy these last 2 days were. Stanton last year, this is a John Boy tweet, swung at 274 pitches, 93 miles an hour or faster. He pulled 4 of them for a hit the whole year. He had 2 of those hits this weekend. So he's halfway to his 2023 total. So if he can get around on fastballs, I change my tune completely. And then it goes back to the can he stay healthy thing, whatever. But if he can pull fastballs again, then yeah, I'll get back in. I just need to see a little more consistently first before I'm fully all the way back.
That is a good differentiator. And JJ and I have talked a lot about how, you know, these past 5 years, we needed Stanton to be the Robin to Judge's Batman. And now we just need him to be like a solid third or fourth option. The pressure is so much lower. What we're expecting is so much less. And for me, like, if he can give me 240 with 28 bombs, I will gladly sign up for that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think that'd be ideal.
He's been hitting fourth against lefties and a little bit later against righties. I personally, whether it's a lefty or righty, I don't like him cleanup because I want somebody that has better bat to ball skills after the two horses. Where's your ideal spot for him?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know that I would slide him down just yet. I mean, I would like to, but at the same time, then you're kind of getting into a conversation of, are you moving up Volpe to the leadoff spot? Because I do think eventually, and I tweeted this even before the year, that the dream is obviously that he gets that OBP up, K's come down, and he's your leadoff hitter, because he's the prototypical leadoff guy with speed, everything, right? He steals bases. We saw him steal second and third today. But at the same time, I'm not ready to make that move 10 games in, despite how good he's looked, just because I don't want to rush it. I want to let the kid kind of really settle in and establish himself. And then we have that conversation sometime, you know, May, June, maybe.
The best version of this team has Anthony Volpe leading off, whether that's July, August, September, October. I agree with you 100%. Let's jump into him. So I've seen, looking at Baseball Reference here, I'm looking at 424 on the season with an OPS over 1,000. He looks like a completely different person than last year, a completely different player. You mentioned the sequence where same sequence, he steals second, next pitch, he steals third. I know, you know, I was pretty hard on him last year. I think you've been a guy that's been kind of loyal to him from the jump. What are you seeing differently this year?
I think it's the two strike adjustments, right? I mean, I think this is more the guy we were promised in the minors of just the hitter, you know, and I think Gleyber Torres kind of fell into this when he came up with the juice balls, hit a ton of homers, and the Yankees are like, all right, this is who we need you to be. Obviously had, you know, two pretty bad years before now. He's settled, you know, into himself nicely, and Gleyber's established himself as a hitter. I think Volpe, yeah, the home runs were cool last year, but there's just so many strikeouts. He stopped drawing walks. He stopped stealing bases. So for him, you know, yeah, and he still flashed the power a little bit. You know, he's had some doubles. He obviously had the homer off Presley. So if you want to swing big in a favorable count, I'm all for it. But at the end of the day, his speed is too good, and especially, you know, with the other guys we have in the lineup, like Judge, Soto, those guys are the boppers. Like, yeah, Aaron Judge can, you know, do whatever he wants, swing big. I don't need Anthony Volpe swing big on a two-strike count. So everything that I've seen from him has been incredible, and this is the guy we were promised.
And he's switching up his approach. Like last year to me, he looked like Luke Voit, where it didn't matter what the score was, what the count was, what the pitcher was. He was just swinging out of his shoes, whether it was 0-2, 3-0. He's clearly flattened his swing out. And again, this is not a team that has a lot of team speed. It's an older team. He's a younger guy with speed. So again, you got to flash those wheels. I think obviously 35, 40 steals would be the goal if I was him. And you know, like I said, I think the best version of this team has him leading off, but he's been phenomenal. One issue that's been kind of cropping up has been middle relief. Cousins looked shaky. Birdie was terrible on opening day, was kind of shaky on Sunday. Remember, Middleton was out there. Peralta was out there. What did you want to do bullpen wise, you know, over the offseason?
So to me, and I've been, you know, pretty critical of Brian Cashman on Twitter. Anyone that could read my tweets knows that I'm not the biggest fan of his. But that being said, I always give him a pass when it comes to the bullpen, just because he always able to find the guys. You know, I remember we traded for Wandy, and his numbers in San Francisco were horrible. So especially, you know, now with Matt Blake, ever since he took over, you know, 5 years ago for Larry Rothschild, they just seem to find these diamonds in the rough. So I'm okay with whatever, and obviously it doesn't look good right now. I don't know. I have a blind confidence that they're just going to figure it out. You know, I think that some of these guys, I mean, Cousins got here like a week ago. You know, I think Birdie, they're not all going to be successful, but I do think that once you give them to Matt Blake, I don't know. I just think it's going to iron itself out. Call it cautious optimism, call it whatever.
And you think, again, you can throw Ferguson in there. They have added some guys. And like you said, if one or two of these guys can hit, maybe you reevaluate at the deadline. One guy that won't be here at the deadline or maybe ever again is Jonathan Loaisiga. Only took a week for the elbow to pop. Looks like a flexor strain. He's going to get like the Tommy John light, it sounds like, which is about 12 months. I was never counting on him to make it through the year just because he's never done it. Same time, the arm's electric, and he is awesome when he pitches. Do you think this is it for him? Any chance they bring him back to kind of do a little rehab pillow deal? What do you think?
I don't think so. And I saw your tweet because it kind of bummed me out on opening day. I was like, damn, already. And then I saw your tweet a little bit after. It's like, anyone who depended on a full season of Loizaga, you know, I have a bridge to sell you. I forget how you worded it.
Right,
it's true. It is true. I mean, I would have liked more than a week. And it obviously sucked to have that news come out on opening day, especially when, like I said, you know, a lot of these new guys haven't established themselves yet, and you're still waiting on Canely to come back. And then theoretically, you know, if Cole comes back, you move a starter to the bullpen. So, yeah, we are thin for now. But if they didn't do a pillow rehab deal for Betances, I don't know if they do it for Loizaga, you know?
That's a great point. And yeah, the Canely thing really, really sucks now because they never really said it was a specific injury. They just said he was slow building up or slow bouncing back. It sounds like maybe around May 1st, but it'd be awesome to get him back, especially against lefties.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and that's the other thing, too, because neither Gonzalez or Ferguson have really established themselves yet as a go-to lefty option out of the pen. So hopefully at least one of those guys is. But regardless, Tommy Canely is going to be your big guy out of the bullpen against lefties.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Tinder. You matched, chatted, vibe checked. Now it's time to meet IRL. So what's stopping you? Tinder is making dating safer and easier with their excellent safety features. Like Share My Date, the best way to let your friends know your plans. While Moonlight allows you to discreetly call emergency services. And Are You Sure will prompt people to think twice before sending a potentially harmful message. Explore all of the possibilities for yourself. It starts with a swipe. Download Tinder today.
Definitely. And Saturday, just again, working backwards here, starts out like it's going to be a party. Soto walks Judge homers, and we're like, all right, there's the formula. That's the golden ticket. Jump out to a 6-0 lead. Again, that middle relief, it's a little bit soft. They end up having to go to Holmes. The offense exploded, and I was watching on TV. You were there, right?
Yeah, I was there. I was in 202. It was maybe the best environment I've ever been at for a regular season game. Place was absolutely nuts. I've never seen it like that in April.
I turn on the TV and I'm expecting like 35,000 people. I'm like, it's cold. It's a night game. It's 50 degrees. And the place on TV, it sounded like a playoff game.
Absolutely.
The crowds all weekend, I mean, fantastic, honestly.
No, I think it's got to be, you know, the Soto effect. I mean, obviously, you know, the 6-1 start on the road helps as well. But, you know, people are excited to, you know, see this Yankee team for sure.
And then obviously Saturday, it gets a little bit tight. It was nice to see Stanton homered, even though, you know, we'll take those ports jobs. Not going to apologize. Mm-hmm. Rizzo coming off the concussion, was good to see him get on the board. Kind of his patented right down the line, pulls it. Mm-hmm. Clark Schmidt, 4 1/3, 2 earned. He seems like I think he's serviceable, but he seems like a 5-inning guy to me.
Yeah, he's a back end guy for sure. And I do like Clark. And to be fair, I heard them say that pitchers were having issues gripping the ball last night with how cold it was out. So maybe not the best, you know, pitching conditions. I mean, Kevin Gausman's one of the best starters in baseball. And, you know, we touched him up, and that we usually don't do that. But yeah, I agree with you. Clark wouldn't surprise me as a 5-and-fly guy.
And it really is like, you know, you can't predict baseball. They come out of opening day flat and you're like, oh, shit, we got Gausman. And we got Clark. That's not a great matchup on paper. It's going to be cold. And Gausman just didn't have his shit together. Velo was down. It was great to see Judge take him out. Do you see Clark as a guy that's just, like you said, a 5-and-fly, going to throw strikes, have an ERA mid to low 4s, and that's just kind of where he'll slot in?
Yeah, I would be pretty surprise at this point if he ends up being like a top of the rotation type arm. But I mean, hopefully with some of the other guys we have, you know, if he could be that solid four where just, you know, just going to give us a chance to keep us in the game every fifth day, then I wouldn't hate that.
To me, he's a guy you need guys like that to get through the season, you know, to pitch against the Blue Jays, to beat the Twins, guys like that. Is he a guy I want starting game two of the ALCS? Probably not.
No, I agree with you. I was just going to say, I would need to see a lot more from him to be able to confidently say, yeah, Clark Schmidt starting a playoff game, I'm okay with that.
Friday, I was there. I got to say, before I get into the actual baseball, well, where were you sitting Friday?
I was in the left field bleachers Friday.
Okay. To me, the stadium, like the workers, the concessions, like it felt like they just weren't ready to go. It took forever to get in. The concession lines, like you could not get a hot dog. You couldn't get anything hot. Was that like what it was in the bleachers too?
Disaster. I'd never seen anything like it. And I mean, no disrespect to, you know, any of the workers. They do a great job. Like usually it's a crazy system. Like obviously I've been there for playoff games, opening days, big crowds. And it's like, yeah, you got to wait a little longer than usual, but they're, you know, they're pumping out orders. It was like the credit card machines were breaking. It was like, I went to one beer stand in like the fifth inning and they only had Bud Light seltzer. I was at another, I go to another line and they're like, yeah, we're out of beers now. And like 2 seconds before that, a guy with just a pallet of every kind of beer you've ever seen had passed by. It's just like, something is just like off. They just like weren't ready for us to be there almost. It was crazy.
It was very chaotic. There were people cutting, like there were people just going through the exit side and the men's room, just cutting the line. It was, it was anarchy in there. And the other thing that I don't know if you've noticed is there were no vendors on foot selling beer.
Did they axe those? Cause I usually don't buy from them, to be honest with you. But I was like thinking like, man, they would really come in handy right now. Cause this is crazy.
I saw one guy selling hot cocoa like on foot and that was it.
Okay.
Used to be like even last year, and I feel like 2022, there were a lot of guys walking around, and it makes it easier if you don't want to, right? If you don't want to get up, because these bar lines, especially the bars where they have the liquor, like any bar that's serving liquor drinks, even if you just want a beer, it's 25 minutes.
Oh yeah. No, it's crazy.
So that was tough. And then the game, obviously, like the pregame juice with, yeah, first of all, you got an earthquake. You got Stroman pumping up the fans, running around. Soto's literally jumping, bounding onto the field and taking about the pregame energy was electric. And it just, I know it's one game and it's one of 162, but just to have the bats be completely flat, like being there was tough.
No, it was tough. And I said the only thing that saved it a little bit was Stroman was so electric, you know, getting out of a couple jams, obviously goes six scores. So there was at least a little something to cheer for, but yeah, it was tough. The lineup just did absolutely nothing. It definitely took the air out of the place was ready to explode and they gave us nothing.
It was. And I love that you just went right back on Saturday. Was that did you always have that planned, or were you just wanted to scratch the itch after Friday?
So some of my friends had been planning to go for a while and I didn't pull the trigger on it just because I knew if Friday got rained out, it would have been a doubleheader on Saturday. And I was like, I'm not physically built for, you know, it's kind of spring training for fans too, right? It's, you know, it's April for us too. So I can't do 10 hours in the Bronx for my first two games of the year. So that was why I decided to go back.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, so if you were to do that, I'm just trying to think. So if that had gotten rained out, you're getting to, you know, you're at Billy's or you're at Stan's at 11 or whatever, you're going to a 1 o'clock game. Then you got a break. You got to go back to the bars. Mm-hmm. I mean, Your BAC is like a 0.3 by the end of that second.
Oh my God. It's a, yeah, no, that night doesn't end anywhere good for anyone involved, for sure. No.
But yeah, no, Saturday was rocking. And you are a ticket holder. So you go to games. What kind of ticket package do you have? Where do you sit? Like, take me through that.
So I do, the 12 game plan. Okay. So, my dad and I, and then my brother actually graduated from college. So he's in on it with us now too. So 420 is our spot. So we'll sit up there sometimes, like if it's packed. Obviously sometimes, you know, you go on a weeknight game, you can sneak your way down a little bit. Hal, if you're listening to this, no, I didn't say that. But yeah, it's nice. I just love, you know, getting to the stadium. I try and get there as much as I can. But yeah.
It's I'm a Friday plan guy. So yeah. I've got the little Friday guy and I'm in 329. 420 is nice because you have it right over. Mm-hmm. Right over home plate, like you said. And this is something that I've always felt. And tell me if you agree with me. The Yankees lose on a Wednesday night and I'm watching on TV. I'm annoyed, but I can get over it. when they lose and I'm in the building, it takes me like I'm still getting over Friday. Mm-hmm. Like it really sits with you. Is it like that for you?
100% And also, because I end up like, I don't know if you feel this way. I feel like it's on me. Like sometimes it's like sometimes like you start the year. Like that's why yesterday I was like, I can't start 0-2. Like the team starts 6-1. I show up and they lose 2. It's like that's on, I don't care how many other people were at those two games. Like that's on me. Like I gotta be better. So you know, I definitely take it more personal. And then nothing worse than when they get like absolutely crushed. Like last year I was at the Johnny Brito start where he gave up like 9 in the first.
Oh my God.
And then the Domingo start, the one before his perfect game against the Mariners where they were down 10-0. There's nothing worse than when you wake up the next day to the email of Yankees.com. Hey, we'd like your feedback. How was the game? I've sent some strongly worded feedback after those games to the Yankees.
bad time to send those emails. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's no, and it's expensive, but like what I always say, and I tell my wife this, like I'm paying for that adrenaline rush, the 2-strike clap, you know, yep, the explosions after the home runs. Like to me, that's what I'm paying for.
100%. It's also as expensive as you make it, to be honest with you. Right. I mean, like certain people will say, oh, it costs me X, Y, and Z to go to a game. It's like, well, you don't have to sit field level. You don't have to buy, you know, 5 beers. You don't have to buy food. You could bring in food. You could take the train. So there's ways to make it cheaper. But yeah, no, I agree. For what you're paying, it's still going to be, you know, a decent amount of money no matter what. I want to see them win more often than they lose.
Exactly. That's all you can ask for. Do you have a go-to bar pregame, postgame? Do you bounce around or are you kind of loyal to one spot?
I'll go anywhere. If I had it my way, I would be a Stan's first, okay, like pregame, especially when it's nice out, and then Billy's postgame to kind of celebrate. Yesterday I was with a big crew, so I just kind of did Billy's right away. Got to the outside area, which was nice. And then can't do it on weekend games because it just packs up too early. But I do like hitting the bodega sometimes on a weeknight. You get there early, have a, you know, some cheaper beers, be outside. So I'll go anywhere really.
Yeah, I think the Stands before and the Billies after is a move. When you're at Billies and they've won and they're bumping Drake or Big Sean or Fat Joe or whatever, there's nothing better than that.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And we did get some good news. It looks like per Greg Joyce, Gerrit Cole will start throwing Monday or Tuesday. There was the Heyman report that obviously came from Boris. He's targeting June 1st. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. I mean, it literally ruined my mood those couple of days while we were waiting for the results. I'm optimistic just because I think Gerrit Cole is such a meticulous kind of guy, and I think he knows his body, and I don't think he's going to do anything to push himself back before he really feels he could be back and be Gerrit Cole.
I'm very optimistic. Like, I'm not necessarily expecting him back June 1st, or a lot of people are talking about that Dodger series would be a cool time for him. But I am expecting at some point in the second half, we are getting full throttle.
Yep.
A+ Gerrit Cole. Cause remember the MRI was pretty much clean.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And again, I think it's just, you know, I don't know if it was something that maybe would have gotten worse had he kept throwing or, you know, whatever it was. He's just a very, very prepared guy and he takes care of himself and he's serious about this. So yeah, I'm optimistic that he'll be Gerrit Cole, and I agree with you. I think the June 1st thing is kind of arbitrary. In my mind, this whole time, once he got cleared that it wasn't going to be TJ, I just kind of had the All-Star break in my head.
Yep.
It just seems like that's the case. I would love for it to be earlier, but if you told me Gerrit Cole's back first start right after the All-Star break, I'd sign for that right now.
100%. And the rotation, you know, without him has been pretty solid. You know, we talked a little bit about Heel. Marcus Stroman, who was, you know, enemy number one, had everybody, all of us blocked. He's had 12 innings, no earned runs. You know, he was really the only bright spot on opening day. He seems like somebody that is absolutely just embracing the moment. I think he's going to continue to have a killer year.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, he had me blocked for years. I think he was on the Mets at this point. I said something in his replies, I think about Cohen, not even at him, and he blocked me. I think I was like one of the first ones blocked. So I definitely have, you know, had my beef with him over the years, but he unblocked me. It seems like unblocked the whole fan base. And I, you know, I'm a sucker for the whole PR tour he's doing, the whole lifelong Yankee fan thing. And listen, is he playing it up? Yeah. Do I care as long as he keeps pitching well? Absolutely not. I will sign up and I'll be bought in. I've been, you know, now I'm a Stroh fan.
You can pander. IJ, what do you got?
I just want to lay claim as the number one Marcus Stroman fan on this podcast because I was anxious going into the year about how it would work out in New York. He's been unbelievable. and just like him firing up the fans. And he seems like the type of guy that, you know, in that big situation, sixth inning, runners in scoring position, two outs, might get a little too amped up. But that really hasn't been the case. I've been really impressed with how composed he's been in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's fearless. He's also a great fielder, like fielding off the mound, athletic, which is kind of an underrated thing that I didn't even realize about him. He's the classic guy that you hate him if he's not on your team. And then as soon as he crosses over, you love him. And I don't mind the pandering. He can pander to me all day. Like, I feel like we're all kind of eating that up.
Oh, 100%.
So he's been fun to watch. Nestor has probably been clearly the kind of the weakest spot of the rotation. He got bailed out on opening day, but I mean, in both of his starts, he has put them in an immediate hole. You know, in Arizona, that was the one road game that they've lost. He will go Monday, it looks like, against the Marlins. Do you think the kind of the magic is worn off? Do you still think he can bounce back and be a contributor? Where are you on Nestor?
Yeah, I don't think he's that 2022 guy anymore. I don't think we're going to see that. But he doesn't have to be. I think the thing that kind of worried me was that in the Arizona start, the results got better after the first, but he didn't really look a whole lot better. So we'll see. Everyone's kind of chalking it up as like, oh, when Cole gets back, he'll go to the bullpen. Obviously, in a baseball season with your pitchers, you don't know that. So I don't love the fact that we already have a guy in our rotation who we're counting on. And we're like, oh, right, we can't wait till he gets to the bullpen. Hopefully he could be better. I'm kind of holding my breath. I need to see a couple starts go in the right direction for him before I could feel good about him again.
Yeah, the scary part for me is that I don't know, whatever he is. He's 5'8", 5'9", kind of chubby. Like, I don't know if he's built to throw 180 innings and make 30 starts. You saw it last year. I think he made 11 or 12 starts. And I think it's one of those things where I don't want to push him to the pen either. But again, like, the best version of this team, he's probably the long man, I would think.
Yeah, I think of all the guys in the rotation now, I think it probably makes the most sense for him. I mean, obviously you could argue Heal. We kind of talked about his upside before on that. Maybe Clark. Rodon's obviously not going to the pen. Cole's not going to the pen. So he could profile as the best, especially too if you take him after a Heal or a Clark, where you have a righty that, you know, kind of throws hard, profiles very differently, and you go to that crafty lefty. I think that's a formula that could win you a lot of games and save your bullpen.
That's a good point. It is a different look. And then the other lefty, Rodon, I've been really pumped. Clearly we haven't seen his A+ stuff yet, but he's kept them in both games. I think it was only one earned run in each game. And last year, to me, it felt like he kind of quit. I was at the game against Houston where he had his, you know, hamstring injury, but it felt like it was a hot day and he just kind of quit. This year he's been battling, you know, the velo's up, he's been touching. He's got all the way up to 98.5. And I've said this to JJ, if he could just be like a 3.8 or a 4 even guy compared to what we got last year, that's a massive improvement.
Absolutely. If he could stay healthy. I think the biggest thing for me that I've been impressed with is the stuff is back, because last year you could just tell, obviously, you know, he goes down to spring training, he's throwing like low 90s, and he came back and he was really kind of sitting like 93, 94. And that's not the guy we signed. You know, if he's at his best, he's a here's my best fastball, fuck you, you can't hit it kind of guy. So the fact that he's, you know, throwing hard again, the stuff looks good. Still needs to iron out the command a little bit, but I've been very encouraged from what I've seen from him so far.
Yeah, and that's a great point. He's not a guy that's going to be successful at 93, 94. Mm-hmm. Like, he needs to be at 95, 96, especially really just being a two-pitch guy. It has been nice to get even these two great starts out of him. With Cole out, all of these guys are going to need to contribute and string some quality starts together. So that's been good to see. Just a quick injury update on DJ. He is taking ground balls, but he's not moving side to side. To me, that sounds like Memorial Day. When do you kind of expect him back?
I honestly have no mental timeline for him at this point. I mean, once they insisted that his foot wasn't broken, and then they're like, yeah, there actually is a what kind of fracture was? I don't even know the term. It was like
non-displaced. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I would love for DJ to come back and contribute, but it's just kind of one of those things where mentally, I just need to see it now before I can believe it.
To me, it just seems like his feet are cooked. He had the toe thing, I think, in 2022, which apparently it took him a year to come back from that. And he fouls a ball off his foot and he's out 3 months. Like, to me, your body's got to be able to bounce back. I mean, that you're going to foul balls off your foot over the course of the season. It can't take you out for 3 months. And look, Cabrera has been really good to start. I don't know if that's going to continue, but ideally Oswaldo Cabrera can make this a situation where we're really not kind of fiending for him to come back.
Absolutely. And even if it's the Oswaldo Birdie duo, I mean, I know we haven't seen a ton of Birdie yet. He, you know, obviously made that diving play to save the game in the finale of the Houston series. But he's another guy where at the bottom of the lineup can kind of provide a little bit of a different look, you know, put the bat on the ball, speed on the bases guy. He's got a gold glove at third. So, yeah, as long as those two are both contributing, and so far they both have, you know, it kind of makes us say, all right, DJ will get back when he gets back.
Yeah, no, I think that's the goal. And the other thing with DJ is, like, people made a big deal about his second half last year. To me, like, what you do in garbage time, it's just, you know, they were out of it for August and September. So I never really got too excited. He is a guy where, again, it's still, I think, 2 years after this year. So they're going to have to figure out what to do with him. But ideally, Oswaldo makes that kind of easy for us.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA auto insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I want to talk about these lineups. So they've had, looks like they've had, 10 games, and they've already used the same lineup either three or four times, depending on where you look. And last year, the lineup was always changing. Do you think that's partly a Soto thing? Like, Soto came in here and was like, I want to play every day and I want to hit here. Do you think it was Judge kind of giving that feedback at the end of last year? Because there's clearly been some sort of shift.
I think it's a combination between what you said, where I think, obviously, you know, Judge has been vocal. He likes hitting third. You know, Soto seems bought into the fact that, you know, even though he hasn't hit second a ton in his career, also, how could you say no to the best hitter in the world hitting behind you?
Right.
So I think that he's bought into that. I also just think it's a matter of, like, yeah, these are the guys I want at the top of the lineup. You know, like, you feel good about putting Glaber in your top five, you know, wherever that may be. You feel good about putting Rizzo up there, Judge, Soto. You know, hopefully Stan can get back to the point where I'm listing him in that group too. Whereas, like, last year, they were just chasing. Like, they just didn't have guys. Like, yeah, especially when Judge was out, it's like, you know, what are you going to do? It's like, all right, I feel really good about penciling in, you know, Willie Calhoun to the four spotter. Like, I feel like last year they were just searching for something that could work, and they're just trying to make something out of nothing. So I kind of think that's more what it was than, you know, Boone really trying to mess with the lineups.
I went to a game. You're giving me PTSD. I went to a game last year. It was a Friday night, and I think the outfield was IKF, Bowers, and like Franchi. It's just like depressing looking back.
Zero. By the way, all three guys that you just mentioned, zero of them are outfielders by trade. Exactly zero of them. They're all infielders.
Oh, it was painful. But for me, like, a big turning point, even though it was the second game, like, when Soto twisted his ankle. And he goes back, and I think it was Meredith he was talking to, and he's like, I'm playing tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't talk to Boone. And it seemed like that was something where it's like, okay, it's different this year.
Well, even Glaber got hit by a pitch later in that game too. He stays in, comes out, and I, you know, sometimes I'll try and predict the lineup just to mess around, and I didn't have Glaber in my lineup. I was genuinely shocked to see him in there the next day, especially after the Yankees had won the first two games. And then on Sunday too, that they didn't put out a punt lineup. I was like, this is a different mentality. These guys are all playing, like, all the time. They're all, you know, they want to stay in there. Not that they didn't want to play in years past. I'm sure they all want to, but it was just like a, you know, the Yankees would be uber cautious with these guys last year, and that hasn't been the case so far this year.
Yeah, no, it's completely different. And when they started with the load management stuff in like 2018, 2019, I was kind of fine with it. But then I saw the Braves win the World Series playing their guys every day. The Rays have had a lot of success kind of playing their guys every day. And I just, I don't think it really keeps you any healthier. Like Stanton, you know, they give him load management days. He's still going to get hurt. So at this point, I'd pretty much play Judge and Soto every day, and you have the DH spot.
Unless you're legitimately battling something, like we know that that's been the case, obviously, with Judge at certain points in his career. And it's really a question of, I want to get this guy off his feet, you know, get him DH days, get him, you know, that's one thing. But yeah, if the guy's completely healthy, you know, he wants to be in there. Just play him. Play him.
100%. So this series coming up, we have the Marlins at home, which it's interesting because it's a fourth straight playoff team from 2023, but they are horrible. They won their first game Sunday against the Cardinals. I'm glad that they're not coming in winless. I think that actually helps us.
I agree. They were talking about that on the broadcast today. I think Kay was asking O'Neill, like, would you rather them win or not? And O'Neill said, yes, I agreed. You don't need a team that's 0-10, just desperate to win. You know, maybe hopefully they exhale a little bit and we can kind of get them.
You look at the matchups. Monday is going to be Nestor versus Lizardo, which is obviously that's the weakest one on paper. Mm-hmm. Tuesday should be Rodon versus either Puck or Puke, however you pronounce that. And then Stroman versus Weathers. To me, the floor is 2 out of 3. Anything less, I'm going to be very irritated.
Absolutely. Especially at home, the expectation really should always be to win any series, especially against a lesser team coming in. So yeah, 2 out of 3 is definitely the baseline.
And look, this is a series that they should sweep.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I would love to get greedy at a certain point and be like, I'm going to be mad if they don't sweep. And obviously sometimes it depends kind of how the games play out. Like if Lizardo comes out and just mows tomorrow and his stuff is just untouchable and, you know, you lose 2-1, you know, sometimes that's going to happen. But yeah, I agree with you. Ideally, when you're rolling and you're playing a last place or close to last place team at home, you should sweep.
And then after that, so next weekend, they will go to Cleveland where, if you're listening, you probably heard this. Shane Bieber, their ace, is out for the year. So that should be at least cushy. They don't have to face him. And you also saw Strider likely out for the year, likely going to need Tommy John. There's a lot of discourse going around. Everybody's got an opinion, whether it's the loss of the sticky tack, the pitch clock, the velocity. Obviously, nobody has. It's not one thing, but what is your kind of take on all these pitching injuries recently?
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to believe it's not the pitch clock, just because I feel like if that's the case, like there's been plenty of pitchers in Major League history that, you know, work quickly, and you never see anything about that causing injuries. I know Glasnow straight up came out and said when he got hurt a couple years ago that it was the loss of the sticky stuff, so that makes sense. I just think at the end of the day, like, within the last 10, 15 years, like even when I was growing up, guys were not throwing 100 as much. Like now it's like if you had a guy throwing 97 in like 2006, it was like, this guy is legit. Now it's like the seventh guy out of the bullpen throws 97. Like guys are not even like, you know, not even making teams that throw 97. So I think it's got to just be like the workload of these guys throwing so hard, so much, trying to spin the ball. So I think that's probably the biggest contributing factor, but like you said, I don't think it's only one thing.
And it's so funny when you mentioned Jabba. I remember, and he was coming up and he was throwing 97, 98 in 07 that summer. And it was unheard of because even Mo generally sat like 94, 95 with a cutter, you know, get it up to 96, 97 sometimes, but Jabba was a consistent 98. And if Jabba came up today, it'd just be another ho-hum high leverage reliever.
Yeah, exactly.
When was the first season that you really started following the Yankees?
So the first one I consciously remember, like not every single game, obviously, but I remember like tuning in and like being up to date with the team was 2005. So I was in second and third grade.
Okay. Gotcha. So mine was 2000. So I'm a little, some 4 or 5 years older than you. So you saw, like, you remember Prime Jeter, you remember Prime Mariano, because like we got IJ over here who's, you're what, 18, 19, your first season you remember is like 2015, 2016, something like that?
Yeah, so I'm 19. I remember the end of 2016 into 2017. And I mean, I saw Jeter play once, and I remember I never saw Mariano play. I was at a game where he was coming in, but I was with my cousin and he really wanted to go to a toy store. So he left early. Mo came in, never saw him play.
Oh, that's crazy.
Dude, I would still not be talking to my cousin, but I wanted to bring that up because to me, it's crazy that like, and Stanza, you probably feel similar. Like fact that we're interacting on Twitter with people that like, don't remember Prime Jeter or didn't see Prime Mariano. Like it truly is a different generation when you have fans that haven't seen us win.
I think it goes kind of both ways, right? Where there's the, you know, some people in the younger generation kind of poo-poo what the Yankees did in the 90s, right? And they'll, you know, obviously I get super triggered. Jeter's my guy since I was growing up. They're, you know, they'll throw the DRS in your face and all this stuff. So they'll just diminish that. So that's one end of the spectrum. But then the other end of the spectrum is I feel like there's some Yankee fans who grew up during the dynasty and they can't wrap their minds around that not every player we have now is not going to be that good. Like, like there was like Clay Holmes, Mariano Rivera discourse, like where it's like, yeah, like he's not as good as Mariano. We're not going to ever have another guy that you feel as secure as Mariano. That doesn't mean that you can diminish the fact like, hey, Clay Holmes is a solid reliever. He's had very good results for us for, you know, 2.5 years now. So I think that there's got to be somewhere in the middle where, yeah, we're the Yankees. We should demand a lot from our team. You know, we want to win the World Series every year. But also, we're never going to see another team like that. Like, we're never going to have another Jeter, Mariano, you know, Pettit kind of core. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, no, and especially with the way just sports have changed, you don't see teams three-peat anymore. I mean, maybe Mahomes does it, but it's very rare. Glad I got to see, again, I first started in 2000, so I kind of saw the tail end of the dynasty and then obviously 09, so grateful for that. But yeah, and I think about a guy like Posada, when you look at some of the numbers he had, and catchers now, it's like a big deal if the catcher hits 250, and Posada was hitting like 270 every year with 20 home runs. Like, I don't think we're really going to see, I mean, you got Adley and you got JT Realmuto, but you just don't see certain things anymore.
Especially too with catchers, the emphasis on defense and calling games and receiving, it's almost like, you know, a lot of those guys don't even focus on hitting. So yeah, I don't know how many more, you know, great two-way catchers we're even going to see. There's a handful of them now, and, you know, hopefully Austin Wells is a guy with, you know, it could be half of what Posada was, and, you know, as a productive starter for us for a while. But yeah, no, you're right, it's tough. You don't see a ton of
completely different game. But look, the Yanks are 8-2, which kind of reminds me of whenever 98, 99, 2000, those dynasty years. They will go, they'll face the Marlins at home this week, enjoy the eclipse, and then they will go to Cleveland. Stanzo, you got anything you want to plug? You want to give out your Twitter handle?
Yeah, just nkstanzo24. Follow me on there. I'll be, you know, tweet pretty much every game. Yeah, that's just about it.
He's a great follow, and I will be back with JJ next week. And if I don't see you at a game soon, I will see you at the parade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.